We were talking about the Hochschild round table.
Right.
Tondelet was next to three enormous parcels of private land.
Oh.
Bay Pond.
Oh, yeah.
The poor Rockefellers, the William Rockefellers.
Right.
Brandon Park, descendants of the DuPonts.
Brandreth Park, yeah.
Not Brandreth. Brandon.
Oh, Brandon. Not the guys who just
right,
the other
right. Explorer, this was a DuPont. This was a DuPont.
Okay.
And the Kildare Club, which were the three Lehman sisters.
Oh, they were going to be the neighbors of Tondelet.
Right.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay. Well, that's okay. Helpful.
So, now you want to do a sophisticated, scientifically backed environmental hearing, that costs money. The Sierra Club, the Adirondack Mountain Club, whose executive director opposed all this stuff anyhow, the Constitutional Council for the Forest Preserve, the Association for the Protection of the Adirondacks, they weren't used to getting involved in stuff like this. They could send out people to make speeches, but this... So they had some sources of contributions.
Oh.
That... And William Rockefeller, the then William Rockefeller, was a partner in Sherman Sterling, which at the time I think may have been the largest law firm in New York, if not the world. Mm. And by the way, G. Gordon Davis, who was the first general counsel of the Park Agency, came out of that firm on the recommendation of William Rockefeller.
By the way, let me stop you. Let me get you off track here. Do you stay in touch with Gordon Davis at all?
I do not.
Anyway, go on with your story.
Yeah. So when Courtney Jones or whoever it was convened whatever the next round table was on Tondelet, they had some capacity to pay not just for Cave and Emin, because we were always doing stuff for near nothing, but we needed to hire some engineers and landscape architects and ecologists, because if we were going to have a hearing, it wasn't a notice and comment hearing where you show up and make a speech. It was a trial type hearing. Department, I don't think it ever before had a trial type hearing. If they had a trial type hearing, it lasted 2 or 3 days. You know, ours probably lasted 18 months.
And the records of that would be in DEC?
Yeah, there should be a hearing transcript.
Yeah, yeah.
Thousands of pages, I think. Mm-hmm. So we convinced DEC to have this broad hearing. Mm-hmm. And they appointed a hearing officer. I don't think they had an administrative law judge in the department at the time. Because they hired some Albany lawyer to be the hearing officer, I'm pretty sure, who sat there. The hearings were in Raybrook, in the DEC offices. There never had been one before. Mm-hmm. Even since, it was certainly one of the longest hearings there ever was. Mm-hmm. And we tried our best to present evidence on every single aspect of environmental quality that would be affected by this development. Hmm. And the developer didn't know what hit him, nor did his lawyer.
They were not ready.
Not for this type of proceeding.
They didn't know what was coming.
By the way,
that never happened.
You know, the developer was a skilled developer. They had good lawyers, but they were sort of out of their element.
Right.
I don't think we did much to deliberately prolong it, but we went on for a long time. And some of it was the developer's lack of preparedness. Hmm. That issues came up and they had to go scurry and find somebody to present the evidence. And then we presented our own case. And eventually, I don't know whether the administrative law judge issued a hearing or whether they just turned the transcript over to the department, but the department denied the permits.
The DEC.
DEC,
yeah.
Now, they sued.
Right.
And much of what we did got undone in the appellate division.
Much of what you did in the hearing?
Yes. In other words, the appellate division, it didn't matter because by then the park agency had gotten in place.
So, I see.
But when you look at what the outcome of the litigation, they went and hired a New York City law firm, a very fine litigator, who just retired as an assistant attorney general, by the way, a guy named David Ellenhorn. Mm-hmm. Who, if you interview, will tell you he won the case. So court basically rejected the commissioner's view that the definition of public necessity involved a broad environmental impact analysis. Mm-hmm. Seeker had passed by then. The park agency existed by then.
Right.
But upheld the commissioner's denial on more narrow grounds about the water supply and sanitation system.
Found that those were inadequate.
Yeah, that so they didn't meet the standards.
So the original health department permit didn't stand up
for the television. Right, so the department, this function is now a departmental function.
Sure.
And the department denied the permit on a variety of grounds,
right.
One of which was the broad public necessity.
Right.
The court said, you don't have that power, but you do have the power on the more engineering and public health standards, and who are we to second guess the agency that the legislature has put in charge of this?
Oh, I see.
So the permit denial at the DEC level held up.
Uh-huh.
The reasons that we had creatively put forward fell aside.
Mm-hmm.
But by then it no longer mattered.
Wow, so that's the oldest trick in the book for environmental lawyers, is just slow things down.
Until the law caught up with it.
That's, you know, that's what I-